Well, Dr. Roger Vertrees is out of Texas, out of Dallas area, and has verthermia, which is something that I had patients do. They all went through clinical trials called the HEAT trial many, many, many moons ago, which was taking the blood out through basically a filtration, you know, like a kidney, you know, a dialysis machine, and then running it, like heating it to an exorbitant temperature to 107 degrees Fahrenheit and keeping it at that temperature for up to 2 hours, and then pumping it, filtering it, extreme plasmapheresis, back into the body. And I was just intrigued because it was like next gen apheresis of heating and killing and then scraping and filtering and putting it all back in and taking patients that were at the very end of their rope, no other chance to survive, and coming out of it and extending their survival greatly or even going into complete remission. And the craziest side effect was watching all of their Epstein-Barr viral titers and their Babesia and other Lyme titers and their CMV titers all go away. Gone.
Welcome to the Beautifully Broken podcast, where healing meets high performance. From cancer recovery to wellness technology, we bring you real stories and real innovators to help you reclaim your biology and build your personal blueprint for health. Let's go. Friends, before we kick this one off, I just got to reinvigorate the message around Silver Biotics Recover Cream. This is part of my actual recovery routine that I do every day. Here's why I like the science on this one. It has arnica to calm irritated tissues. It has magnesium because your muscles need it to relax and function properly. It has menthol for an immediate cooling sensation to meet you where you're at, and dual hyaluronic acid to hydrate the skin deep into the layers of the fascia, not just sit on top. All of this is wrapped in the patented Silver Sol technology that is third-party tested and clean. There's no junk, it absorbs fast, it's not greasy, and you can use it every single day. Whether you're training really hard or you're traveling, or you're just a human being and your body deserves the support, you can use code BEAUTIFULLYBROKEN for 30% off on your first order. The link is in the show notes. Let's go. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Beautifully Broken podcast. We have Dr. Nasha Winters on our show again. Welcome back.
Muchas gracias. So good to be here.
So good to be here. Oh, we should have just hit record like 30 minutes ago and let people listen in on the preamble because it's good stuff.
Because it's so good to be here, even in the what you call the beautifully broken shit show of it all. We're here.
Yeah. Yeah. What a wild ride. I feel like, I think you were, you know, you said it hadn't been long. I think you were over like 100 shows ago.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, you have been too busy, my friend.
Yeah.
But it does feel like a snap. You just have that impression, Freddie. You stick with people.
Yeah. Well, you stick with people. I mean, your light is so clean and pure. Mm. And, you know, you would walk up and we'd have a conversation for 30 seconds and you'd understand that, like, how do I get more of this person? Where are they? What are they doing? And so I will prompt the audience that I will put our previous show in the link so people can get download episode version one. And a lot of it, we talked about the metabolic approach to cancer. We talked about your book. And, you know, I know a lot of time has gone by, but I love this question. If we were in an elevator together and you were trying to tell me like how you work in the world of wellness, what would you tell me you do? You got like 10 floors. You got a while.
Okay, good. So it's not just like a one, three, boop. Okay. Wow. Ooh, that's so juicy. Okay. First of all, I would feel into you to see where we are and what you're able to take in or not take in. But basically, I thrive on people's stories. I want to understand people's existence. I want to understand their patterns. I want to understand what makes them tick. And I want to understand how to optimize on that.
Mm, beautiful. Beautiful. God, there's so many different directions I can go. I was talking with a friend yesterday. We were texting and we were saying, I was lamenting on something that was challenging for me. And she goes, you know, Freddie, your mind is your greatest asset. It is your greatest liability. And that is the paradox of existence.
It is, my friend. And no matter where you go, there you are with it. And I'm having such an incredible journey with that myself. It's funny how you think you got it all figured out until life throws something at you and you realize I'm just floating randomly on this big rock in the universe.
Yeah.
Just a really, like, what do I want to do with this? What is that Mary Oliver poem about? What do I want to do with this one wild and crazy moment, this one wild and crazy life?
I know. I find when I have those similar feelings that I am reminded of the value of being able to be present in the mundane. In, you know, I had my vacuum cleaner out this morning and we get a lot of flies in Austin. So we're sucking up the flies in the little portable vacuum cleaner and then I'm releasing them into the wild. It was like, what if, you know, you could be like, oh, I hate doing this. Or you're like, I'm really good at this.
That's really good. I love it.
Yeah, just being present.
Releasing them makes me really happy, Freddie. That speaks volumes of your character.
Yeah, we release them into the wild. Yeah. I texted you in a moment of intense, energetic, emotional. I had a tide of, I was really frustrated about the internet. And in the which, even since we've last spoke, the accelerated channels of information coming at people, specifically around cancer.
Yeah.
And I had said, man, I'm so tired of this holism, wellness, longevity side. I see it be just as dangerous as living off prescription meds. And I was like pounding my fists on the table. I was like, I want to just talk to Naisha about it and this concept of internet oncology. And so how are you assisting people to navigate the information and tides in that space, specifically around cancer?
Well, I probably should give a little context that you and I talked a little bit about on our first podcast, I think together 100 plus episodes ago, was just in 1991 when I was diagnosed. There was a very different time and place. There was no Dr. Google. There were no Facebook groups. There were not thousands and thousands of books and hundreds of influencers in the space. In fact, I went out of my way to keep it very private for the first 21 years of my experience with it. Whereas other people start to, today, it's like a badge of honor to share these things. And that's not to show that there's something right or wrong, but just to show how different it was for me in the time and the place. Even then, when there was no options, if you will, it still felt overwhelming. I can't even begin to think what it's like for someone to be diagnosed today with everything they have coming at them, the well-meaning advice of your neighbor and your friend and your internet, you know, cronies and all the different things that are coming at you. I don't even know how people begin to navigate it. And so what I feel like I get to do today is for those who are tired of being in the overwhelm environment is to help start to make sense, to kind of curate out what makes sense. And it's not about any particular protocol that works or doesn't work. It's about you and your individual patterns and what your body needs at any given time, not what this latest cancer treatment is all about. We focus on the treatment and not on the person. And that's what I'm hoping this conversation gets people curious to think about it differently.
That's right. That's right. I was saying with a Dr. Scott Sherry yesterday.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm talking to Nation tomorrow. We were talking about, well, I've talked about this a lot. It's like that. I remember being so excited about functional medicine. I was like, oh my God, finally somebody gets it. But the failure there has always been treating labs and treating lab values. Do you know what I mean? We shifted the flashlight over to look at another spot in a very big room. There was not a lot of innovation. It was like, but it was exciting because it was new and we saw that what we were currently doing was not necessarily serving us. I want to invite people into this conversation, what you're saying right now. It's like, well, if we don't focus on the treatment, what do we focus on? What does the landscape look like?
Well, before we go there, I want to say something that I have contributed greatly to the deep dive into data, because it is something that is informative and is exciting, especially when there was no compass. There was no metric. There was no way of understanding this. And then the pendulum in my 35 years has swung so hard to the other side that there is a metric for a metric for every metric that there's a metric, right? It's like now the data overload is taking people further away from themselves rather than closer. So I was on the cusp of watching how data brought us closer to ourselves. And I've also been on the cusp of watching it take us further away from ourselves. So I wanted to just own my contribution to that and to own that I don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I still love data. But I want the context and I want the story. I want the biography that goes with that data. I want to understand that in its entirety. And so maybe I'll pause there. And actually, you brought up another question, but I wanted to cover that piece before we stopped the data discussion.
No, I mean, listen, we will follow the stream of consciousness with that. It's true. It's like, you know, I've watched it swing both ways. And I know there will be people listening to this episode that have never tracked their sleep data or their bowel function or their microbiome or a complete genetic blueprint. And then there'll be other people who have done everything. All I can do is offer my experience is that it was someone with all the data and all the information. I've been equally as confused, if not more lost at times. I can identify with that. So I did this podcast, Nate, show a little while back about like the role of influence, like our responsibility when we have influence. And that oftentimes when we make it through cancer, when we make it through rheumatoid arthritis or post-surgical, whatever, that we look back and we're like, oh, let me create meaning of my journey. And I find all too quickly, you have people launching into this is a protocol for somebody else. And if you understand like how the human mind is selective and it's listening and information, that's crazy talk.
Yeah. That's huge.
That's crazy talk.
It's massive. And it's massive in that even part of my secrecy of my own process all those years ago was I was afraid that people would think that the way I did it was the way everyone's supposed to do it. And I knew very, very clearly that my path and the things that happened for me were for me and they were not to be compared and contrasted. And yet the first question people often ask me all these years later is, what did you do to treat cancer? I'm like, God, I'm still doing it every day. Like Freddie, just like you, like we're still learning about ourselves. It's an ongoing self-discovery. And I think that that's what some of the data of today and some of the functional medicine speaking to that data is distracting us from the discovery of ourselves.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty boring when you think about it. It's like you really should rise and fall with the setting and of the sun. You should be outside. You should journal. You should be able to express your feelings and other than happy, mad, sad, angry, joy. Like there's a lot of it's the boring stuff.
Yeah.
That is really so very powerful.
Yeah. But you can't market that, Freddie. You can't. Well, maybe you can because you're a wizard at this type of thing. So, you know, bringing the soul back into sales and whatnot. We were talking about that before the recording. But it's sad that we do have to re-educate about the fundamentals that we've gotten so, I don't know, like overly sophisticated or so sexy with all of our hacks that we've forgotten the basics. And so now when someone is consulting with me, I'll ask about the basics and I'm shocked at how often they're overlooked. How shocked, like just completely shocked that it's like, how could you have left the fundamentals off the table? Yeah.
Yeah. Or I have another friend who's literally been in this 4 or 5 year journey. He just yesterday, he was like, I went to a biological dentist and I have an infection in my jaw. And they think that, I'm like, yeah, like the teeth. You know, we miss stuff that seems so obvious, but it's just, it comes back to the journey. Mm. And I do think that back to the health fluence or, you know, our roles and responsibility is that we can always be safe in imploring people to better know thyself, better know your habits, you know, how you operate in the world, how you react or respond to outside world. It's just so good. That being said, I want to ask you, I want to drill down into me here. Why may the ketogenic diet be beneficial for somebody going through cancer? And why can it be the wrong diet for someone with cancer?
I love this question. I mean, first of all, ketogenic diet, by definition, is a high fat, low carbohydrate, normal to low protein diet that was developed in the 1920s to treat children with epilepsy. very effectively. And so effectively that when the drug Depakote came out in the 1940s, it replaced the diet, but the diet always worked better than the drug. Yet, you know, people like to pop the pill over the do the diet. So that's one piece. And yes, a therapeutic ketogenic diet of high fat, low carb, normal protein nature can be a tool, can be a therapy, can be an effective treatment for many conditions, including mental illness, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, cancer, epilepsy, all the things. However, where it does get misunderstood or mismanaged or misappropriated is that not all of us will be served with a high fat, low carb way to achieve ketosis. In fact, there are some of us who have certain epigenetic single nucleotide polymorphisms that make that virtually impossible or very difficult to achieve or maintain, or can backfire to push us into other conditions that are not favorable to, you know, conducive to life. However, what we have shown is that ketone bodies themselves, these little signaling molecules, get kicked up when we eat a high fat, low carb diet. That's one means of achieving ketosis, but you can also achieve ketosis with just fasting, both intermittent and longer term. You can also achieve ketosis with just carb restricting. You can achieve ketosis with exogenous ketones, and you can even achieve ketosis with certain supplemental or pharmaceutical interventions. So the real question comes to ketone bodies and what are they and why are they important? And for me, when I look in the cancer space specifically, there's one or two studies that have really come out to question whether ketone bodies themselves can be problematic for somebody with cancer. And I will tell you, as someone who's been in this field for 35 years, I've not seen that play out in my practice, but I have seen where a high fat, low carb ketogenic diet can be problematic for certain cancer types, such as prostate cancer, certain types of breast cancers. These are cancers that we learn about more through their blood and tissue biopsy testing to understand the personality of the tumor per se. And then I look at that data with their, here's the data thing again, I look at that data with their single nucleotide polymorphisms, the blueprint that they came into this world. And then I know that maybe the ketones aren't the problem, but the way they achieve them could be problematic. And that's where we focus our attention. For the most part, when we look at the hallmarks of cancer, there are multiple doorways. There's 10 to 16 different doorways that are considered hallmarks of a cancering process. Standard of care hasn't yet gotten to the point of asking, why do those hallmarks express? That's what my job is to help understand that. But what we have learned is that ketone bodies seemingly walk through every one of those doorways in a really good way. And so ketone bodies, no matter how they are achieved, some places more optimal than other, are going to enhance the treatment of the cancering process based on whatever hallmarks that patient is expressing. And so for me, it still becomes a very valuable foundational tool to create ketone bodies, whether it's through fasting, high fat, low carb diet, carb restriction, or exogenous ketones to achieve certain therapeutic goals. So I'm not sure if I answered your question directly, but I wanted people to get a different framework and context that ketone bodies are a natural physiologic state that we've worked really hard over the past 150 years to avoid. We've become very hypoketonemic over the last 150 years just by the nature of the world in which we nourish ourselves and function in.
Yeah. You know, as you're speaking, I realize how many different ways we can get into that ketotic state or taking an exogenous ketone to boost our levels, and also realizing we all come to the table in a different place. Our relationship with food, our psychology around food, what that social and what does eating feel like in a social setting? And so that's so different for everybody. And that's going to play into a role. That's why I think it's so important that people discover the different layers of context, as opposed to taking that information from Instagram and being like, well, this person said this.
Right.
This person, that's where everybody loses.
100%. And especially when someone is doing something they are perceiving they should do because of the should heads on Instagram, you know, that are out there. And when it fails them, they think they failed. And then they're blaming themselves versus maybe the approach was not the best fit for them. Maybe not the right dose, duration, combination, you know, for them. So that's something to keep in mind. And I really appreciate, Freddie, that you brought up just even the relational aspect of this. Who you're eating with, where your food is sourced, when you're eating, also plays a role in how well your body produces these little endogenous signaling agents. Is really critical. If you're under a hyper stressed response, it's much more difficult to achieve ketosis than when you're in a normal, normalized, emotionally resilient state.
Yeah. I want to insert here, just for everybody listening, that many times you'll find the conversation drifting back to the repair for this, the fix for this, your solution. What are the guidelines that exist in nature? What are the rhythms that exist? Because everything, including the tide and the sun and the moon and cycles and seasons, all move on cycles and rhythms. And so the body does that in a lot of different ways. And so we can take prompts from the majority of human civilization that existed on the planet and followed like a sundown, sunup approach.
Yeah.
Or we can look to different cultures that existed, and there was you just didn't have access to the foods during the winter months. So there was a preparation process in which visceral belly fat was a great asset.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? And now we're in this weird black mirror culture, and it's like we're all trying to be this physical thing. And because the mind is really strong, when we set on a goal and visualize it, fuck, I'm going to get there. Be it fasting, starvation, or a GLP, I'm going to get there because that's the body I'm told that I'm now worthy of love by having. And that's the thing. We go back to the mind. It's so powerful. You know, man, what a powerful meaning-making machine. So I just wanted to say rhythm of nature. Now let's flip the coin and let's go back to, you know, I see the posts all the time. You can starve cancer by not eating sugar. Cancer is driven, cancer proliferation, tumors, they're driven by sugar. Can we unpack that a little bit and why that may or may not be true?
Well, I think here's the key is that there's never a single cause and a single, you know, treatment or a single cause and effect. That just doesn't exist. Can it enhance a cancerous process? Absolutely. And it can so when our glucose is elevated, our insulin responds to that elevation, and as such, kicks up something called insulin growth factor, which is a known cancer cell proliferator. And that is active in, depending on the literature, 70 to 90% of all cancers. So let's just ballpark at 80%. 80% of people would do really well to carb restrict to a degree that is different than their previous set point. Any amount is going to improve upon that, right? Maybe you just get rid of the soda or the juicing, and suddenly you have a very different set point and your body responds gorgeously. But when we overshoot, when we get super critical and maybe get our carbs under 5 grams a day, our body is so stinking wise that it's going to find a workaround. It's going to start to pull glucose out of a process known as gluconeogenesis, which basically takes your protein and converts that into sugar. It's going to move into burning fat as a major fuel source, which puts you into ketosis. And these are the types of things that the body is always going to strive to survive. Cancer cells have an even higher drive to survive, to even the detriment of the organism in which they're inhabiting, right? So it's like my colleague and friend, Dr. Tina Kazor, she calls cancer cells sociopaths, and that they have no remorse and no regard for the harm they're doing, right? And they will take themselves out in the process with this. And so that's what's happening is, yes, we can starve things to a degree, but the workaround will hop up. It's like the whack-a-mole game. You push too hard in one place, it will express in another. So what that tells me is very much, Freddie, what you just alluded to is what else is signaling in the body? Because there's this concept, I call it the four S's. So there's the sugar. That could be one big signal. That could be that you're eating too much sugar for too long and the too much of the wrong sugar for too long. And maybe the timing of that sugar intake for too long, right? Maybe you don't have the genetics to even break down that sugar as easily as somebody else. That's one component. But let's say you dial that in and you're eating a super carb restricted and you're still cancering. Then we want to look at the most important next one, which is stress response. There's our cortisol dance. Because when cortisol is high, your insulin is high, your glucose is high. So suddenly you're eating perfectly, but you're not dealing with your stress response. you're not being very effective at starving cancer because you're now feeding it from a different doorway. The third one is sex. And when sex, I mean sex hormones. So estrogens, progesterones, DHEAs, pregnenolones, testosterones, thyroid hormones, the whole communication system of the body, when it's off, when it's skewed heavily in one direction or another, especially when we're exogenously pushing against that, we will also skew things like cortisol and insulin. So they bounce off each other as well. And then the fourth one is sleep. So circadian rhythm biology. Studies have shown that just a couple of nights of bad sleep directly increases insulin growth factor. So as you start to realize you could have the most perfect diet, but if you're up scrolling, doom scrolling at 1 a.m. on your computer, you're feeding a million different pathways that are far more detrimental than that piece of sourdough bread you could have had at 7 p.m.
Yeah, it's so powerful. I said this on the show with Dr. Scott, but I was in a peer group and we were saying, a practitioner was saying, she goes, oh man, all the women in my practice, she's like, nobody has any libido. They're like, sex drive is through the floor. And she's like, can we explore the hormone and the hormone balancing? I was like, dude, ask people to do a fast from their phone for 30 days and see how the volume on your libido changes. Because that is, if you think about the dopamine pathway and the power of the phone, if you hit it for 4 hours a day, because you're pumping it, what do you think happens to all the other, you know, the sub channels? It just drops through the floor. If you're not watching this on video, we're both dropping through the floor.
Exactly.
And it's not that the phone is causing the lack of libido, but it certainly is a lever that we're choosing to pull.
Well, that's like the sugar conversation as well, right? Sugar is also a dopamine hit. And, you know, social media, a dopamine hit. Shopping, sex, drugs, alcohol, food addictions, all these things. What are we lacking in sweetness in our life that drives us to finding sweetness in other places?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you a big thing that comes up for me where I feel the wind leave the sails is being a provider. When I'm not achieving or I'm not, you know, my income isn't to the place that I want it to be, I feel like, where'd the wind go? Like, I feel it leave the sail. I mean, everything from like energy, joy, and I get a little lost. And so that's like a core thing that I get to work with through all the channels that I choose to work with. But it's a noticeable shift. And I could be like, well, maybe I didn't have enough Motsi or methylene blue or whatever, you know, maybe I need to go contrast therapy. But that signal that comes up a lot about not feeling like I am being a provider, it's very strong for me. It's pretty wild.
And provider for your household or provider to patients or both?
Household.
Okay. So there it is. I mean, but that's so... Talk about ancient, talk about primal, right? And, you know, before you could like go out for days and find an antelope and bring it home and everyone is rejoicing and there it is. But today it's like, if it's not a constant infusion, I've seen a lot of masculine emasculation through this, the culture we're in with regards to this as well. And I think the feminine has been damaged by it as well. But I'm really intrigued what you said about putting down the phone for 30 days. Because I remember a time not that long ago. I mean, I've been with my partner for, we're coming on 35 years this year.
I love it. How's that possible? You look 35.
Oh, I could, well, that's, thank you. you know, it's just great, but it's like, we didn't have, I mean, we lived in a teepee for 2 years. So talk about being completely off the grid, you know, no screen time of any kind. We were in the pre-computer era, like, you know, portable computer and pre-cell phone era of our relationship. And some of the richest moments of our marriage and our relationship, all of them were without cell service or screen time. And I will tell you, it is a libido killer when the first thing you reach for, the last thing you put down is your cell phone, instead of interacting eye to eye, heart to heart, knee to knee, chest to chest, groin to groin, whatever it is with your partner, with your beloved. It's so interesting how we've prioritized something else because the dopamine hit is just so intense. It's like it speaks volumes to it. I've seen so many write about the porn addiction world today because it's so much damaging of the dopamine centers of the brain. there's really no difference in just social media scrolling, even if you're looking at cute kitties, you know, it's like, it's still something that takes you away from the sweetness of life.
Yeah. Yeah. And what is that about? What is that there for? You know, what's the deep longing that's filling? That we can't be with that pain. You know, it could be the pain of existing. You know, that's, everybody's going to have an individual answer, but what is that void filling? I want to comment on something that you said. We talked about carb restriction and you brilliantly said, you know, stop the soda or stop the juice. Because we can have these very seemingly, I did a juice today. I had a green juice. I had a, you know, how many grams of sugar sans fiber are we hitting, which can be just as detrimental.
Well, think about, I love how you brought this up earlier about, just think about our recent ancestors. Were they Vitamixing or juicing anything? Were they gathering pounds of produce to run through a blender or a juicer to get their nutrients? No, like that's such a modern thing. And this, as a recovering juicer, recovering juiceaholic, my blood sugars were far, far more. I mean, we were not even borderline diabetic. We were full-blown diabetic in my biggest juicing days. And that was even drinking the green juices because I was giving myself none of the fiber. And when I mixed it in, like, oh, I'll bring in the fiber with the Vitamix and all the different things, it still was too much. And what was interesting, and Freddie, this is a really interesting accidental study. I had a young family whose daughter had AML and went into remission beautifully with standard of care, you know, the whole bit, and ended up with a recurrence 5 years to the date of her going into remission, which is unheard of. And we were looking into what was different. One of the things that was different is they lived on a cornfield. So they bought this beautiful property and her glyphosate levels and pesticide levels were beyond anything I'd ever seen. The other thing that was different is mom was like learning about functional medicine, integrative medicine, and realized she wanted to clean up her kids' terrain. So she was juicing for her children, her son and her daughter. And she tested the whole family. Her and her husband were not imbibing in the juice, but the kids were. It was like a daily treat and a daily breakfast. And they were having several juices a day and off the charts of arsenic levels. They were choosing a ton of organic spinach, which sequesters a lot of arsenic. And when the other members of the family tested that weren't juicing, they didn't have those levels. And so suddenly you just realize, like, again, the solution to pollution is dilution. These little beings were concentrating the pesticides from the cornfield, the pesticides and the concentrates and the oxalates and all the different things, even in the organic produce, to then push their systems into something that was not right, you know, was not conducive to survival. And so what was really interesting is the family moved away for a while from the cornfield and stopped all the juicing. And within about 6 weeks, their glyphosate levels were completely normalized. Arsenic levels completely normalized. The beauty, Freddie, is that we can change that up really quickly and really easily. And that bought this little girl a lot of time. She really cleaned up her terrain and was able to do very, very well for a long period of time. And so those were those stories that kind of haunt me, that we think we're doing something right, but you don't know what you don't know until you know. And that is where something like data can be really helpful, because we get into, as you mentioned, the influencer vibe, and we watch people making these recommendations, and we can cause more harm than intended.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why there's not a Freddie Beat Cancer site. The Freddie Beat Cancer book, Follow My 102 Steps. Yep. Kills me. Kills people.
I still have student loans as a doctor who doesn't have my own Nation Beat Cancer site. So, yeah.
I know. Every time I talk to a marketing person, they're like, why don't you have more pictures of you with, like, in the hospital and hooked up to all the IVs and your surgeries? And I'm like, because I don't want to live in that trauma anymore. It's up there. But that's like fear. I mean, I get it. Probably would be great marketing. I probably have a bigger platform. I want to go back to something else you said. Do you want to say something about that?
I would, because I'm really grappling with this. And I feel like of all the places where I could have this conversation, you're the place to have it. You know, I was very private about my diagnosis until about 2012, and my diagnosis was in 91. So again, very, very private. And a few things transpired that really brought me sort of out of the closet, if you will. And then what happened in the next 13, 15 years of that is I became, even though I was doing the same level of really amazing work without people knowing my history, it did something different to my following and to the people coming through my door when they realized I'd walked this journey as well. And in the beginning, I really grokked with that because I was like, well, okay, I'm the same doctor. I'm the same person. I have got the same approach, the same philosophy. Why does me having a cancer diagnosis matter? You know, why did that matter? And I understood just the human connection side. And so I ran with that for a long period of time. I'm like, okay, I get it. People need to know that someone understands. And I, again, it was the relational human side of it. But for me in the last few years, what's happened is that I have been identified as the cancer person. And I'm like, God, I fought so hard not to be ever considered a cancer patient. I fight against the concept of being called a cancer survivor. And I fight against the concept of even just being my whole world being cancer, that I'm coming full circle that I don't know how or what this looks like, but that is what I don't want to be known for in this world. And I don't know, like that has become my identity, Freddie, over the last, you know, 15 years specifically. And so I'm super intrigued, just curious of you who's had a similar journey and met people like me along the way. What would you say to somebody like me really battling with this right now?
Yeah, that we'll never control outside world, that people can carry with them the meanings that they're going to make up. But I think if you just lead with your North Star driven from your heart, you're like, I'm just following what I'm doing. I'm improving people's position in the world. Yeah, that happened for me. But, you know, it's just how much energy, it's energy behind the action. It's how much energy you give it to free yourself from that tether that could be weighting you down. Because again, everybody's going to make up the stories they're going to make up. We are meaning-making machines with anxiety and a sense of our own mortality. So allow people to do that if that serves for them. And it is a part of your story, right?
Yeah, it's very, but very much a story.
I always feel, I was like, look, I mean, and I always feel that people are like, well, you must know you've been through it. And I was like, absolutely not. I mean, I can just tie together my points of story as I am making up a literal story. What did I say yesterday? I was like, Freddie said, I was like, story driven, science backed.
Nice. That's actually really good. TM.
Trademark. Story-driven, science backed, because that's what, yeah. Again, the hit from everybody who's like, I've talked about growing the messaging platform is like that it needs to be more. I need to talk about the disease states more and the things more. The critique has been you're too philosophical. But in my experience, that's what health is. It is a philosophy journey.
Yeah.
It really is, because it's like, you know, it's there's just so much physical that is going to be informed and taken place and switched on and off by my thoughts. And that's science backed. It's like, that's it. Yeah. Now, it doesn't take away from the value of me doing ridiculous things. Like yesterday, I have this new, like, Anders Olsen. We talked a while ago. He's going to come on the podcast.
Yay. Yeah.
We're going to talk about, because I, you know, the thing that I want to talk, now we can pivot to oxygen and carbon dioxide, is cool. That, and tech, because I'm a tech whore. My house is ridiculous. And yeah, you only need the rhythms of nature, but then like, oh, it's over at Freddie's got like, it's like literally got a net. My structured water blown in my face while I'm doing our podcast and all the other things, right? Yeah, my MOTC and my N-acetylsalank and my dihexanasal peptide before we started. But you only need nature. So yes, I will talk out of both sides of my mouth. I love all the technology and it does improve. It improves all the things. So I talked to Anders and we were talking about oxygen. And it stemmed from the idea that I've never pulled the trigger on a hyperbaric chamber, which... claustrophobia and like time and like, I just don't like it. And so I'd always been looking for these alternative sources of increasing my oxygen. And carbon dioxide is like, well, that shouldn't have an impact on oxygen. But we, you know, we niche down to the Bohr effect and see how it actually makes oxygen delivery more efficient on an internal method. And then there's like all this research. I mean, like, oh, wait, back to Greece. We're making carbon dioxide baths. Team, I was deplatformed from YouTube. 10 years of work, videos, content, everything I believe about health, longevity, and community is gone forever. Why? Because I talked about Silver Biotics.
their toothpaste, their wound gel, and their recovery cream. That's why I was targeted. But here's the truth. This isn't influencer hype, it's science. Silver Biotics uses a proprietary nanoparticle called AG404, or Silversol. These ultra-small particles, just 5 to 15 nanometers, carry a unique silver oxide coating, giving them multiple modes of action against harmful microbes. In lab studies, nanosilver has shown antimicrobial and antibiofilm effects, for example, inhibiting candida biofilm formation. Reviews highlight how particle size and surface chemistry determine its effectiveness against microbes while remaining safe for human tissue. And here's the kicker. Silver Biotics Armor Gel is FDA cleared as a medical device for wound management. That puts it in a rare class of company. It's a natural technology with regulatory recognition. I know, I'm frustrated, and I could have walked away. I could have said, you know what, it's not worth the risk, and that's not me. Silver Biotics remains our top sponsor because I believe in what they're doing and the people behind it. It's a brand for families, for moms, for anybody who believes in the body's natural ability to heal. From immune support to skin repair to pet care, they built something for everybody. So I'm not quitting on this one. And you can use code BEAUTIFULLYBROKEN at checkout. Try Silver Biotics today. Let's go. Do you ever dip your toe in the water of like carbon dioxide as a therapeutic? What's your understanding of it as a modality?
Well, I mean, first of all, one of my favorite pools to soak in is a carbon dioxide pool in Calistoga, California. It's like a giant swimming pool and you feel like you're like swimming in like champagne. Like it's effervescent and you feel just the tingles. It's divine. It's such a really cool feeling. Fast forward, I remember reading Breath with Nestor, who Founders is, you know, featured in this book. And then I was speaking at a conference shortly after that where he and his partner were also presenting in the Maldives. And I got to experience the CO2 suit firsthand. And of course, I'd read about it. I had like the theory and the science behind it, but I'd never experienced it. And I'm a very experiential person. Before I read anybody else, I'm going to put it on myself first, good, bad, or ugly, right? And I had an experience. And Anders will tell you, like, I had basically a hallucinatory experience. I had a very interesting process and I could feel things. And I'm like speaking to him about every single sensation and experience I was having. And he was just like, that's like, he was so taken back by what I was feeling because I was feeling what the science shows. I was explaining what was happening at that cellular and even organelle level of my being all the way up to the esoteric aspect. And I was freaking high as a kite. It was such an incredible experience. And I've done a lot of hyperbaric and I always feel, and this is just me, this is just my experience, my story. I always feel like there's energy pressing in on me inside the hyperbaric chamber, which is, that's what it is. It's pressure under, you know, oxygen under pressure. So of course there's that quality, but I felt an opposite, like an expansion quality with the CO2. And I think my nature, my being really likes the expansion aspect of this. And the other thing I started to learn from speaking with Anders is the idea that there's like a yin and a yang quality. For me, the hyperbaric is pressure in to create an oxidative stress on purpose, right? And it's yang. It's that very masculine. The CO2 was more like an invitation and expansion outward, the yin of this, which is like inviting oxygen into the system versus forcing it in. And what I started to understand is that my patients with what I call poor terrain capacity, where they're oxidized out the gills from maybe too many standard of care treatments or even too many alternative stacks that have created a lot of oxidative stress, they don't need more input. They need more expansion and release. And so the CO2 therapies seem to have some really powerful play in my patients that are really overwhelmed. And so I know that was a super esoteric conversation to have here, but I see this beautiful dance, and Anders and I have talked about how we could do some research about what are we actually seeing. That is where the data gets fun. That is where I can groove out on this. But what I can speak to is just how it feels. And for me, it feels like an expansive and calming an antioxidant type of quality versus the opposite.
Yeah. Incredibly calming, incredibly calming. I just have their little rebreather machine. So it's literally like a little computer disk. And I went and got a welding CO2 tank And I'll breathe that for 4 to 8 minutes and just, and I've gotten to the point where the first time I did it, I was like, dude, I'm so high right now. It's like, this is amazing. But then I, like you put on your, you know, like you put on your pants in the morning, you're like, oh, these are tight. And then you never think about the constriction ever again because the body's like, oh, it's normal. It's not new info. So this idea that we entrain to the therapy, right, is we're not noticing like, what's it doing to me? Inside, I'm getting this same molecular activation of improved delivery all over, which is a big, big thing I talk to people like, you know, did I feel it? What's it doing? You know, you can't, if I dump a cup of water on your head, all 100 people in the room, if I do it to everybody, we're all going to get wet. If I put a PEMF coil on you, everybody's going to have a boost in microcirculation and cellular voltage, whether you feel it or you don't feel it. So I'm always trying to explain it like this to people. It's just, it's not like an immediate always, it's a terrain element in which we're boosting oxygenation or energy. And over time, if it's stretched out in the right therapeutic dose for your physiology, you're going to get a training effect.
Yeah.
So you're going to get a boost long term. The thing I like about the CO2 is just try to do as many pushups as you can.
Oh, yes.
And then breathe like 8 minutes of CO2. And you're like, why can I do like 10 more pushups?
It's incredible. That is a very interesting phenomenon.
Yeah.
Very interesting. And and Anders has like on his side, he's got some really cool videos of this for people to watch that in action, but to experience it. I mean, this is one of those things, right? It's got to be experienced to explain, really, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. Have you heard of the, I'll just mention this quick, then we'll get back on track. Have you heard of the Bimini? Do you know the Bimini people in Houston?
That name is so familiar.
Have you heard of Cocoon up in Hungary, the Cocoon oxygen nanobubbles?
Okay, yeah. Is this similar or is that what they're doing in Austin? Okay.
Bimini is in Houston, is a US company that made a mechanical filtration for water, but they're doing it for like, it's like, $9,700
instead
of, it's like a home unit.
Yeah.
Instead of $100 million instead of $100,000. So you can get a home unit for your bathtub, which I have in the home. And I measure the parts per million, the bubbles, right?
Wow.
What is it? It's 0.01 micron nanobubble, water stable. I'll go in and measure 3 hours later. It's still oxygenated.
Wow.
But I got to be in there for 25 minutes to get a 90% saturation deep into the quad muscle. So I'm getting it. Right. And it's really interesting. If I'm in there for long enough, I can start to feel like movement up in my tonsils and my glands and my mouth starts to tingle a little bit. It's so cool.
How much fun is this? Now you have to send me a link just so I can check it out.
I know, I know. Well, I'll put you on.
You said, speaking up both sides, like just get out in nature. And these are the cool things that help us understand why nature works.
Well, here's the other thing. And here's how my ego justifies this is that in a body, for me, I went through 25 years of brutal, brutal Lyme disease. I grew up next to the cornfields in which the planes would fly over and like they'd all be wet and we'd be building forts in the corn because it's spraying fucking glyphosate on them. And, you know, as much etoposide and cisplatin as the body could handle and then blah, 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 blah. And I'm aging. So I'm in a body that is in, it's the process of entropy. I'm going back to dirt. So while I'm here, I just want to be as effective and capable and not like brain fogged and fatigued. You know, it's about, I want to be capable while I'm here. So that's how I justify it.
Well, and Freddie, I'd like to offer, I've met a lot of biohackers out in the world and they're really amazing, amazing humans for sure. And there are some that are just so mechanical that they don't even know how to have a conversation or, you know, interact with nature. You have this uncanny light about, you talked about my light in the beginning. My God, man, it's like, it's just a reflection back to yours of just how you show up and how you interact. I love watching you in action at one of the booths that you're like, you are so stinking present and you are so like, right there with the person experiencing whatever there is to be experienced at one of your, you know, booths and just the way you are living the F out of life and trying to metabolize all of it in like one giant bite. It's contagious, my friend. And it's really neat.
Thanks.
You saying I'm nature boy and I love to have these experiences that maybe can help somebody else. Cause sometimes we need a runway.
Yeah.
Or an enhancer.
That's right.
Or something like you said, with the layers that you had built up for all those years, you might need some bigger devices to scrape down to the bare earth again. Very powerful.
You might, I look at the space right now, and again, you know, you go to these, I'm going to a show in 2 weeks, there's 100 technologies.
Yeah, amazing.
100. And it's like, it's just changed so much. There's only like 4 or 5 things like 15 years ago. There just wasn't that much stuff. And now it's like there's 100. And so it becomes increasingly challenging to have discernment. And I find, especially in the space, people are like, oh, I bought that. It didn't work. I bought that. It didn't work. And I'm like, my brain's like, wait, tell me. It totally works. Timing, constitution, duration, dose.
Right.
It might not have solved. And this was always my experience. The thing that I was always, I was like, I want the rheumatoid arthritis pain to go away. And so I was always searching for was going to the next lily pad for the thing that would erase the thing that was the pain point. And it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. There are layers. You know, you'll get there or not, or you just, you know, have improvements in your position so you can keep going a little bit. But It's a journey. I want to talk a little bit about the lymphatic system and oncology and cancer. So, you know, I'm 4 years every single day talk about lymph, every single day, all the studies, all the modalities, all the different ways you can work with it. Obviously, I work with Flopresso, and my pain point when I talk to doctors a lot of times, really high-end MDs, physicians, hospitals, they're always like, you see, they look at it and they're like, oh, lymphatic drainage. Lymph. Yeah, that's interesting. And then they scan their head and they try to think of the 1 to 2 people in their clinic population with lymphedema. And they're like, oh, Cindy's got lymphedema. Nobody connects the idea that moving your lymphatic system is supporting the glyphosate, the metals, the toxins, the whole immune system, your NK killer cells.
Yeah.
Why is there such a gap there with lymphatics?
Well, one of the things that you didn't mention, which I was surprised, I thought you were going there in the beginning, was how many people are telling somebody like you or somebody like me or a massage therapist or whatnot, don't move the lymph.
We're going That's there.
You're hanging out. Look at those lymph nodes. And here's the craziest part to me is I'm trying to remember how long ago now, but it's probably been a decade. There was a study that came out that basically highlighted the fact that it was like a 50-50 split in oncology, in conventional oncology, that roughly half of the oncology world and researchers believe the lymphatics to be where the cancer cells go to die or be sequestered or to be held or pulled out of circulation to be, you know, phagocytosed or what have you, like to be broken down and removed, right? Or walled off from the rest of the body. And the other half believes that this is where cancer goes to spread. This is where it does its damage. And so, first of all, I mean, can both be true at once? Probably. Let's not gander on either side of this. And yet, the simplest thing here, it's like, why do we so underestimate the power of our largest garbage removal system only, you know, up there with our colon, right? It's like, this is such a big overlook. I didn't learn about lymphatics in med school. Very much like you learned about lymph nodes in your anatomy class. You really didn't learn much about them beyond a few fundamentals in your physiology or your endocrinology, right? So you just really weren't taught about how powerful these are, even in naturopathic medical school. Like you had to kind of talk about cleansing the lymphatics in like these obscure clandestine environments. It wasn't given much scientific rigor or scientific thought. And yet this is such a big one. And so when people say, oh, don't get massages when you have cancer, or don't do lymphatic massage, or don't do this unless you have just lymphedema. And even then you have to be careful. I think we are really underserving our patients in that environment, that this is one of the most profound tools. Have you had Dr. Perry Nicholson on your show, Freddie?
Not yet.
Thank God. I love him so much. He is a doctor who...
You know Perry.
So he does some he just like has this routine that is so easy and he makes it fun. He's so engaging and teaching. It's like, if we all did that every day, if we started doing that in, you know, in our toddlerhood, Montessori schools, like what would that do to our healthcare system?
Yeah.
Start to teach these littles about the movement of the flow of their lymphatics from the first moments they can even form movement would be pretty amazing. But yeah, it's a strange dynamic, Freddie, that it's so misunderstood or misrepresented or even like put into the, you know, put fear of God in people to want to mess with their lymphatics.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild. It's wild when you really start to understand that it manages. It really does. It manages all cellular waste. It's like, and I tell people, like, if you thought about like the interstitial space or like the space between cells in which we have this burden of fluid volume that needs to go back into the lymphatic system. By the way, the lymphatic system is smooth muscle, and the little muscles, the lymphangion, are moving when we're in parasympathetic. So to create a stasis within the lymphatic system or slow down your drainage in sympathetic dominant state, just like as you're listening to this, be like, where's my nervous system? Do you know what I mean? It's like, of course, we don't want to wait till we have lymphedema or lipedema or a disease of the lymphatic system or a nodule. We actually want to complement this every day, because if 94% of us have metabolic dysfunction in the United States, do you think perchance it's related to the lack of movement, sympathetic dominance, and environmental burden, or the net exposome stress on our cells?
Yep.
A little. Yeah. Yeah. And then the other thing is being able to talk to so many clinicians and see, it just supports everything. It's crazy to me that it's not in a hospital. It doesn't matter what you come in with.
Well, even coming back to what you just were talking about, the CO2, talk about something that helps you, I guess I'm going to use the word undulate, or, you know, like undulate the flow, the ebb and flow of the movement of lymph. Sorry, there's a big truck going by. Speaking of ebb and flow.
No, it's okay.
Okay. Of that movement, it's like, that's what the oxygenation, like that pushing and invitation for things to push and pull, that is so integral to that process as well. So most of us are walking around hypoxic, or walking around without any circulation, stagnant, thick, sticky blood process. Like everything, when we just leave any amount of fluid just sticking around, just sitting around, it's going to get funky, and it's going to funky fast. And instead, like here where I live in Mexico, a couple nights ago, they did a big drive-through with a dengue, you know, cancer spray, dengue mosquito cancer spray. And we're like, close up all the windows. And it's like, you know, and everyone's like so worried about dengue. I'm like, we all live around dengue all the time. It's like, how about cleaning up the environment that you live in, all the standing water around your property, and also cleaning up the environment you live in, the standing water or the lymphatics within your own property, to not be a nice vector, a nice dinner for those dengue rich mosquitoes. So it's just it's funny how we think about things differently, you know, just even our perspectives down here. Yeah.
Yeah, it's wild. I would just implore people not to wait. But, you know, getting to talk to all these practices, because like you said this a couple times, I think in the beginning, you're like, well, listen, there's a gap between research and then being in practice. Like the data in the study doesn't always work on people. But understanding that, like, as a terrain element, like boosting somebody, I see everybody get into health. And one of the first things people go to, they're like, oh, I'm going to go to Restore Hyper Wellness. And I'm going to get infusions in fluids and vitamin IVs and Myers cocktails. And like, if you were to look at your intracellular, extracellular fluid ratio,
yeah,
which is already off, and then you're going to go add another liter of fluid, like what that cell can take in and let go of is based on an osmotic balance. It's like the math ain't mathin'. So all these clinics that are doing it, and again, you don't need to bring in a lymphatic therapy to treat people. However, understand like, it's part of that, like if you had a big wheel of like technology that was going to complement health, I'm like, it's not one to skip.
No. I mean, my gosh, right under my desk right now, I have like one of the ancient vibe plates that's like one of the Dave Asprey early ones that like astronauts use. I mean, it can shake my house to the ground. It's so intense.
I know it. I know that plate.
And it's a tank, like this thing to move it. My husband's like, if we have to move this again, I'm leaving you. I mean, it's just like, it's traveled all over the world. But between that and as when I had my private practice in Colorado for many years, we had a trampoline in the backyard. So between patients, I would jump on the trampoline. And that was my favorite lymphatic movement. And now I do things between hot and cold, between like, I love your spot for like hot and cold pumps my lymphatics. And I do have lymphedema from my pelvic cancer that, you know, really took a beating to my whole pelvic floor and all the things going on there, that I do have to do extra work to keep the lymph moving in this. And because I tend towards the sympathetic dominant side of things, everything kind of squeezes up. So it's an opportunity for me to like think about my health in a different way, and one that I try and take great. I mean, I've been dreaming, Freddie, since I had my very first slow presso with you, of owning my own and figuring out how to like strap myself into it. I can't imagine trying to get my husband to do this to me every day. Maybe I can, but it's just such an incredible resource, an incredible tool to address this first and foremost, because if I don't have that working, nothing's working. Got the homunculus open so that I can pump the lymphatics to get the garbage out.
Yeah. Yeah, I love, we have a big trampoline here. I love it. I love the trampoline. I love brisk walking. I love contrast therapy for moving, deep diaphragmatic breathing, legs up against the wall. All these things work, you know, they're all free. I do love the, you know, the other thing, like really, really been thinking about is this prevalence of nationwide brain fog. Everybody's telling me brain fog, brain fog, brain fog, and that it's not alleviated and that it's a constant. You know, if we think about the glymphatic system and these different postural adjustments, you know, as I'm rounding down and I get this thoracic outlet syndrome all day, or like this forward head posture, understanding that these lymph nodes in the face, head, and neck, you know, you got 600 to 1,000 in the body, you got 300 in the face, head, and neck that are gates for the drainage where the glymphatic system ties back into the cervical nodes, that these need to be opened too all around here. That's a spot we skip. I've been playing around with different frequencies of red light. And it's funny, there's not a device on the market. I think it's 1237, which is a light frequency that's infrared that is really, it gets deep enough into the occiput, gets deep enough into the meninges of the brain to complement glymphatic flow. And I've been playing around with a device, doing it on the back of my neck. I can feel fluid moving when I start to swallow after 15 minutes. Pretty wild. Yeah, pretty so wild. Cool. I'm going to connect you with Scott Kennedy too. Scott has a red light cap. It's like a ball cap.
Cool.
But it's got these flaps that come down and they get the sides of the neck. Or you can go under the jaw and you can get the tongue.
Oh.
Is it battery packed? You can just wear it. You could be chilling.
That's so cool. Instead of like, so we're like graduated from like the beer bong hats to moving into the lymphatic.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love this. This is why we keep you close, Freddie, is you are again, nature boy, but you also show us the cool things that can improve upon or help us make sense of what's always worked, which I think is so cool. Yeah.
I said to my dad yesterday, my dad lives in Rochester and my sister's in Buffalo area. There's like none of this up there. It's so, like maybe one, like, you know, some people with red lights are compression, but it's very, you know, there's nothing like there is in Austin. Now in Austin, there's like literally 30 centers. I mean, Ways to Well is there, Alive and Well is here. Everybody's, now the new thing is plasmapheresis. What's your thoughts on total plasma exchange?
Well, it's interesting because I've had patients, there's a company called, Dr. Roger Vertrees is out of Texas, out of Dallas area, and has Verthermia, which is something that I had patients do. They all went through clinical trials called the HEAT trial many, many, many moons ago, which was taking the blood out through basically a filtration, you know, like a kidney, you know, a dialysis machine. And then running it, like heating it to an exorbitant temperature to 107 degrees Fahrenheit and keeping it at that temperature for up to 2 hours, and then pumping it, filtering it, extreme plasmapheresis back into the body. And the thing that they were also going through was like gallons of sodium bicarb. I'm watching the, you know, the anesthesiologist over there on the, I called it the DJ machine. You know, he's over there looking like he's doing something really cool, putting tons of sodium bicarb into this, which is like another little scrubby buffer, you know, to the whole system as well. And I was just intrigued because it was like next gen apheresis of heating and killing and then scraping and filtering and putting it all back in and taking patients that were at the very end of their rope, no other chance to survive, and coming out of it and extending their survival greatly or even going into complete remission. And the craziest side effect was watching all of their Epstein-Barr viral titers and their Babesia and other Lyme titers and their CMV titers all go away, like gone, including hepatitis C, gone. And I'm like, that's where and this was probably 2010 or 2011, I was seeing this, and they weren't testing those things, but I was in my practice. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. These patterns going, wow, we've now removed some of the other triggers of the terrain that were allowing this cancer process to take root in these people to begin with. So I got really excited about it and then started learning about it and having patients go to Europe to get this type of treatment. So we've had patients getting apheresis, plasmapheresis, and all these treatments abroad for and in Southeast Asia for decades, but it's now kind of making its way into the US. And I think there's great utility. I think there's a lot of people who don't quite know what they're doing with it. And I think you have to be very, very careful and you have to prep the body appropriately. There's a lot of pre and post testing, and you really need to make sure the rest of the emunctories are working and that you're not pushing them too hard because it can backfire pretty hard. But I think there's some really powerful utility for it, especially in the era of spike protein, which is really tenacious in many of us. And I'm excited to see some of the outcomes, especially in patients I've sent to Germany for this, that are finally resolving long COVID syndrome that wasn't resolving in any other way.
Wow. Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. Incredible. Yeah. I know it's a big, but everybody's asking me, where do I go for this? Where do I go for this? Only because, you know, we've got our Austin Ways to Well, everybody's posting their bags of plasma or Pulse Aldino. It's like, look, yeah. I took 25, 30 years of toxins out of my blood. I was like, well, they aren't all in the blood.
Right, right.
And, yeah. You know, yeah, you know, you got your circulating supply. Now what happens?
Yeah. Well, now you've opened up the reservoir for all to come rushing out of the other tissues it's been hiding in. So that's why people can get much sicker faster if you're not careful. You don't understand that it will release in one level of tissue at first and then the next and then the next. It's a layered process. And then if you're not cleaning up the environment around you, you're just filling it up faster than you ever filled it before. You know, so it is a really careful process. It's like when we got into the beginnings of IV chelation. We're going to have the same problems. We already are having the same problems. So you really need to know how to invite things out and gently keep going after it and then helping them clean up the environment around it all along. Those who come in and do like, I'm going to go here for 2 weeks and do it hard and blah, blah, you're going to hurt yourself. Like you could really cause some problems with that. So you got the hare or the turtle versus the hare. The turtle will win this race if you're doing it correctly.
Yeah. Every time, you know, I think we had said this on the show yesterday with Scott. It was like, nothing's free. Like nothing's free. Like there is even energy, right? If we do, let's say we do some of these new cutting edge mitochondrial peptides to give the body energy and we run the engine real hot, the cellular engine is not different from that of a Ferrari. And so there's a byproduct. And my question for people always is, do you have the hardware in place to process all that extra juice if we haven't earned it? Not to say we can't meet people where they're at and support their energy, but that's my question. And I would want to say, I'm not a practicing clinician, but I understand simple equations of thermodynamics.
Totally. Well, that's my concept. This, you know, I'm developing further this terrain capacity spectrum is to understand when to challenge the body. So when to push really hard and when to regenerate or pause, you know, and take sort of inventory and give the resources, you know, restore the resources so that it can handle whatever you're doing. And so we've understood this in like the phase 1, phase 2 detox pathways. We can look at your single nucleotide polymorphisms. We can look at your cytochrome active, you know, your P54 enzyme activity and know if you push too hard on phase 1 and your phase 2 isn't working, you are going to get sick.
Yeah.
Right. And so that happens more often than we'd care to admit in the medical field, both from conventional and non-conventional world. And so the same thing is happening when we're pushing people in these oxidative therapies, like we're stacking our ozone and we're stacking our high dose IVC and we're stacking our photodynamic and we're stacking our apheresis and all these things create even high dose therapeutic ketogenic diet brings up a lot of reactive oxygen species. And if you don't have the capacity on the other end of that to deal with that increased pressure challenge in the system, it will backfire and could actually proliferate in the cancer process, a lot of problems, but it can also just collapse the system altogether. And sometimes we like to give that the name detox. It's a detox side effect. You're just detoxing. Those are detox symptoms. Yes, and patients don't have to experience that if you're doing it thoughtfully, properly, personalized, and precisely. It's a really elegant way to practice medicine. But if you're hopping into kind of protocol centers that are just like throwing you through the whole line of it, they'll have a couple people, maybe out of 10, let's say two have a really good response. Six will have a terrible response and the other will have just like a meh. It's you can make it work better for everybody if you do the proper prep and follow through.
Yeah. What about, you know, I've also seen in the interweb lately, I have two things I really want to talk about, is the idea of these broad spectrum antiparasitics, fenbendazole, ivermectin, having a mechanism of action with cancer. What's that about?
First of all, there's some super cool things here. So my friend and colleague, Dr. Mark Lintern, he's not a doctor, actually. He was a, you know, just a engineer brain, like a really brilliant systems thinking brain in another industry altogether that dealt with his own cancer process and started going down the rabbit hole and started to think about cancer, you know, going, okay, the metabolic approach is a far closer fit than the genetic, you know, approach or the genetic theory of cancer. And he was very comfortable and interested in that piece, but he felt like there was one or two pieces still missing. So he dug a little deeper and feels like there's this sort of fungal etiology to the cancer process. Now, this is not really a brand new idea. I remember my early diagnoses in 1991, I was going down the rabbit hole of others of times before who looked at cancer as a fungal disease or an infective disease process. So it's not that it's new, but the way he unpacked it was really new and some of the conversations around it. So his book, Cancer Revolution, if you've not read it, or Cancer Resolution, if you've not read it, fascinating. Mark Lintern really breaks down really well of what he sees is the reason for this. You know, like the reason why these drugs like fenbendazole, like mebendazole, like ivermectin, like some of the antiparasitics, like some of the antifungals are having kind of their day in the sun in the oncology space right now. Now, what I want to say is that there has been such a massive movement in repurposed drugs, off-label drugs over the last few years that it is mind-boggling and head-spinning. And on one level, it's just as bad as what we talked about earlier of like the influencer, of like the people who jump onto the juicing wagon. Those jumping onto the off-label drug wagon are having just as many problems as those who jumped on the juicing wagon, right? Like it is not meant for everybody. And again, timing, dose, duration, combination, as well as your own pharmacogenomics makes a difference. Your gut and liver tolerability make a difference. What else is it being stacked with makes a difference. None of these drugs were ever meant to be used by themselves. They were actually studied more in conjunction with standard of care pharmaceuticals. So they were to help overcome things like drug resistance or to help more direct, like a Trojan horse, certain chemotherapeutics into the target, you know, the desired target. But a lot of people will see one thing online, go and order it from China and get themselves a whole lot more than they bargained for, right? So we have to be thinking of that. Coming back down into the research of the viral fungal etiology, and this is where Mark and I've talked, I still, and this is just me, and this is not to discredit this theory, because I think it's a very compelling theory. But for me, just like the hallmarks of cancer wasn't enough, I still want to understand why we are surrounded all the time by bajillions of organisms, fungal, bacterial, viral, mycoplasmic, all the things, and why we all don't succumb to them all the time. I still want to understand the environment in which a fungal infection could suddenly come in and flip on and off certain switches that might happen for me that doesn't happen for you. So for me, I'm still always digging into the why. Why is this fungal driver a problem? Why is this person responding to itraconazole or mebendazole when they don't even have any known from testing fungal infection that we are aware of? And so to me, what this era shows me is just a lot more of unanswered questions and a lot more curiosity of what I want to lean into. But what I will tell you is we've had this knowledge around us for thousands of years, probably millions of years, but for thousands through the work of Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine, who have a lot of herbs that are rich in antiparasitic, rich in fungal, rich in antimicrobial, that have been known to treat cancer for thousands of years. And yet we're looking yet again down the line of a pharmaceutical intervention where a dietary or even herbal wisdom did the job for millennia. And so I get curious as to why we're not putting more research into, now, of course, some of those are because they're limited resources, right? In pharma, you can synthesize these things in a lab and want to maintain good protection of these valuable plants. But I am curious why we're not doing more research in things like berberine is a really good example.
Yeah.
Right? Berberine, one of those Chinese medicine cancer herbs that we've been using since I studied Chinese medicine. I've got a doctorate in oriental medicine and Chinese medicine and herbs and acupuncture. And it was always one of the anti-cancer herbs that we used. And that's long before we learned it had such a powerful metabolic impact. And so this is where these conversations are exciting, but I still don't think they're the answer.
Yeah. One more before you go. You know, there's been lots of interweb noise about the prevalence and increased rates of colon cancer in young adults. And then we just had a person from my community, James Vanderbeek, just passed away, you know, a couple months ago. He's such a, what a special human being. If you ever got to talk to James, he was just an awesome, awesome soul. Obviously, we could probably theorize on a whole nother episode why this is happening with colon cancer, why in young adults. What is your thought on this as it comes up in the news cycle right now?
Well, we started to see the trend in younger and younger cancers before the era of COVID hit. So we, you know, a lot of people try and just blame that, but it started even before then. Part of it is that, let's just go back a little bit here. We never had plastics in our environment until the latter part of the 1960s, and they became ubiquitous. I mean, they are ubiquitous now. We're eating an average of a credit card a week of what is, I don't think anybody would fight me on the fact that this is a very dangerous known endocrine disruptor, right? I think even conventional scientists are like, ugh, we're kind of screwed when we look at the plastics, which is things like the apheresis is also interesting because it's pulling those microplastics as well.
That's right. So,
that's something that's been kind of woven into it. In 1969, Dr. Huber from Indiana, from Purdue, started whistleblowing on glyphosate that was happening in the lab and saying, you know, you guys, this is like nature's biggest antibiotic, and you're wanting to put this on all of our crops. Now, he was whistleblowing against it. He's actually had multiple threats on his life. He's now into his 90s and is still fighting this good fight, who is one of the most dearest humans on this planet. And I'm praying that he gets to see some of these changes before he leaves this planet. But basically, we, by the 1980s, it became just part of our food source. And today it's found in every single droplet of rain, every, you know, piece of soil, every filtration of air. It's in all of our organic and our non-organic products. It's basically something you can no longer avoid. And so the place that it gets sequestered the most is in our grains and legumes. Okay. They are chelators of the soil. And so they take that right into the very. We've also had a big push in the last several years to go back to vegetarianism and veganism. That's been a really big draw, which means by default, you're eating a lot more of these grains and legumes. And that's been in the generation that we're seeing these younger and younger cancers. So I've seen in the testing of these a lot higher rates of veganism and vegetarianism, a lot higher rates of glyphosate and pesticides, a lot higher rates of plastics, and of course, just the ubiquitous environment that we live in. It's just anywhere and everywhere now. Dr. Crinion, who was my teacher in environmental medicine, used to say, it's not about if you have toxicity, it's how bad is it and how does it interface with your terrain, with your blueprint. And so even studies coming out showing that children born after 1980 are not expected to have the same life expectancy as their parents should have caught some people's attention. It certainly did mine, but everyone else seems to just be sweeping that under the rug. The layers of new things that we've brought to our environment since the 1960s, well, since World War II, really, when we decided, hey, let's take all the leftover ammo and turn it into big ag and big pharma, that's where it really started. But we had a generation of people who already had a good runway without all those things. They also didn't have plastics, they didn't have glyphosates. They didn't have ultra-processed food. They didn't have any of those things. So when you look at it, it just makes sense. I mean, Rachel Carson was speaking about this in the 1960s, you know, the last spring concept that just generationally, we are sicker each generation that comes through. There are another 200 chemicals in our cord blood today. And so it's just unfortunately catching up. And the crux of this is our mitochondria. Our mitochondria are the center point of our longevity. And when they're stewing inside the wombs of our mothers, inside the wombs of their mothers, before we even pass through to enter this world, we're already exposed to more toxicity than any previous generations before have experienced. So those are some things to look at. And the other side, and this is more of my esoteric hat, my Chinese medicine hat as well, is that the large intestine is, in Chinese medicine, an organ of grief and loss. And I believe that the younger generations are carrying a bigger load, maybe subconsciously, of they carry a burden that is a world that is not a very safe and thriving place right now. And you just flip on the news for a hot second or scroll, do your doom scrolling, and you're taking a lot of that in. And where we don't process our shit is where danger lies. And so it's not exactly a mystery to me why. It's not a single cause. It's definitely not a single treatment to handle it, but there are things that need to be explored. And my hope is that it wakes up the current generations to help to make the policy changes to help the future generations have a fighting chance.
Yeah, beautiful, 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 beautiful. Well said. Now, given this big conversation, people are listening to this and like, wow, I'm fired up.
Yeah, or they're ready to jump off a bridge. And I'm like, please don't do that. We need all of you here. The most beautiful energies, because it takes all of us, the collective, to craft the way we want.
Where can people follow and read more, Naisha, and dive into your intellect?
Well, go and follow me. Even my book is almost 10 years old now. It's still incredibly relevant. The Metabolic Approach to Cancer, it really dives into all these concepts of what's driving the chronic illness and cancer process in all of us.
Yep.
So it's a really good starting point. You can learn more on drnaisha.com. Just kind of follow me there. And I've been kind of processing my own. I've been sort of metabolizing my own life experiences on a free Substack called Tend the Terrain, which is very Freddy forward, all very terrain centric. And that's really the direction I'm going in all of this is, yes, we have all these amazing data points and stats and AI and tools out there, but we have fundamentally forgotten the foundational things that really create the environment in which we thrive or dive. And that's where I'm kind of digging in a little bit deeper there, if you want to join me over there as well.
Beautiful. Well, we will have you on again, if you will grace us with your time. Because I had like 50 questions here, but it's just a great reminder how much power and advocacy we have, like that's immediately accessible.
Yeah.
Right? We came back to that a lot. It really is the simple stuff. The last thing I want to ask you, if somebody called you and they were looking for a recommendation, are there any centers in the US that you love that you think are really like, oh, they do a great job? If you're struggling with cancer right now, if you want to bring in the conversation around all these different therapeutics, is there anywhere you would tell people to explore?
There are a lot of amazing places that have a lot of cool tools, right, mm-hmm. in their offices. My question, my ask of anyone seeking is to ask questions of the front desk or the doctor, if you can talk to them directly, if you can get out a discovery call, is to say, how do you support my terrain while you're supporting my tumor? That would be my question. And if they can answer that to your comfort, then that's the place for you.
Beautiful. Beautifully said. My friend, thank you.
I adore you. Keep doing the great work, my friend. Keep shining your light.
I'm doing it. I'm doing it. Big love.
Back at you.
Friends, let's take a break from the show. This one is near and dear to my heart. Half of all Americans will develop cancer in their lifetime. But most of that risk of development of a cancer is preventable. And CatchBio is the world's first personalized cancer prevention platform. You answer questions about your health, lifestyle, family history, and Catch analyzes over 500 risk factors to calculate your potential risk for 21 major cancers. Then it builds you a customized action plan and a screening protocol. Right now, I'm looking at my dashboard and it's recommending a urinalysis, testing my home for radon, and having a full skin examination. This is backed by peer-reviewed science, not generic guidelines. This is a platform that you continue to work with and improve your position over time. Members reduce their risk of cancer by up to 60%, and that is less than $17 a month. You get a discount with code BEAUTIFULLYBROKEN. It is free to start and view your score. So you can go to catchbio.com, take control of your health before cancer has a chance to catch you.
season 9, year 7, nearly 300 episodes built on one belief, that healing doesn't need to pick sides, and neither do I. If this show has added value to your life, please take 30 seconds and leave a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify. It is the single biggest way to help people who need to find us. And trust me, they're out there looking. And when you're ready to go deeper, head over to beautifullybroken.world. That's my website. It's not a wellness store. It's everything I personally use to rebuild my body after 9 tumors and chemotherapy. This is the technology, the supplements, the self-quantification tools, curated without an agenda, with significant discounts, and completely free from the marketing noise. You're also going to find a direct path to work with me one-on-one, and access to the Biological Blueprint Academy, where the real transformational work happens. No guesswork, no bias, we just give you the full picture. You can also find us on YouTube at Beautifully Broken World for unboxings, product breakdowns, and a face to go with the voice. So, quick note from my vast team of internet lawyers, they are very expensive. Everything here is for education only. Nothing on this podcast is medical advice. Always consult your doctor for your actual medical needs. And as we close, your oncologist may have saved your life. What comes next is what we do here. We are in a paradigm shift, and the world needs you at your absolute best. Use these conversations as a jumping off point. Listen to your body, trust the process. Life can be painful, but how do we put the pieces back together? That's the beautiful part. I love you. I'm Freddie Kimmel. I will see you in the next podcast episode. Let's go.